several years ago, I had a friend, and I use the term loosely, somebody I went to church with, and we visited together a lot, and we ate together a few times, but I don't know that we were ever really friends. He had a personality that sometimes would drive you away from him. Sometimes it would draw people near, but most of the time it was almost caustic sometimes. So I don't know that we could really say friend, but I'll say a friend from several years ago. And I'm going to say his name because he's gone now, and I want to give him honor where honor is due. His name was P.R. Watkins. And P.R. had this ability, and I want to share this with you, and that's why I brought this up, because every one of us has this if we're willing to use it. P.R. was the guy who would be in line behind you at Kroger or in line behind you at Walmart or something, and he would say something like this. Where's Jim at? Jim, where are you at? Jim, I don't see him. He was here a little bit ago. Oh, way back there in the back. You're not even, okay. He'd say, Jim, I notice you've got all these children with you. Those are beautiful children. Those are wonderful children you have there. And your wife, she's absolutely wonderful and beautiful. I bet the two of you have a great time with your children, don't you? I bet you love your children dearly. Where do they go to Bible school? Well, don't you think they need to know about Jesus? If you'll bring them to our church over at the Downtown Church of Christ, our preacher will teach them about Jesus, and they'll have Bible classes for their age that'll teach them even more about Jesus. Wouldn't that be fun? To everybody he met. To everybody he met. He was a constant encouragement to bring people to church. Problem was, he was also a constant encouragement to drive people away once they got there. But that's a whole other story. He was the guy, and any of us can do that. Any of us can say to the person in line in front of us, oh, wow, hey, I love your hat. Guys, talk to them about their shoes if you want to. Just say hello, it's good to see you, or something like that. Or if they're with their family, say, hey, you've got a good-looking family there. Where do y'all worship at? And when they tell you they worship at Podunk whatever, you say, hey, well, that's great. I just recognize you look like somebody of faith. And if they say, well, I don't worship anywhere, say, I'd like to invite you to come and worship with us and hear about Jesus. And you might be surprised when you look out and you see people. He would always finish up like this. He'd say, my wife and I have been married for more than 50 years. He said, we always sit kind of most of the way up on the front over on the left side of the auditorium there when you come in the back doors. He said, and if you'll look, you'll see me there, and you just come sit with me and my wife, and we'll help you watch your kids during church so you don't have to worry about them being an embarrassment. That's the way he would finish. And you would be surprised the number of people almost every week he would have some new member or some new visitor there, and some of them became members of our congregation because of the ministry of this man. So I give credit where credit is due. He's also the guy that would confront the same person in Walmart 6 weeks later and say, well, you came to church once, but you never came back. So like I said, sometimes it wasn't as positive. We live in a world where people want to be noticed, and that's a way to notice people. We live in a world where everybody wants to be famous. I mean, I would imagine you recognize just about every face up there. There may be one or two that somebody doesn't recognize, but everybody else will recognize those if they don't recognize the others. Everybody wants to be the next big star. Everybody wants to be the next big talent. Every athlete wants to be the next big superstar. You know, they're talking about baseball players. Got a guy that's, he's expecting to make $700 million to play baseball. If they gave me a couple of hundred, I'd show up. You know what I mean? I wouldn't be as good a player. But they could hire me. How many times would that be for $700 million? Everybody wants to be the big star. You know, there's an old saying. There's no such thing as bad publicity. People will go to tremendous lengths to get noticed. Even serial killers sometimes do what they do so that they can make a name for themselves. I want to kill more people than anybody else did, and I'll be famous forever. There's nothing wrong with being well known by the world. There's nothing wrong with being noticed for what we do, but Christians ought to have a bigger desire than to magnify ourselves. You see, our goal, Paul's goal, he says, my eager expectation, hope, I will not be at all ashamed, but will with full courage always, or as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by life or by death, for to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. As Christians, we ought to be living in such a way as to bring glory and honor to Jesus Christ, not to ourselves. Now, if we get recognized for that, that's fine. If we're out doing good for the cause of Christ and somebody says, hey, I appreciate what you did, that's fine. They can appreciate what we did. And we can respond with, well, you know, God loves you. Because that's really why we do what we do, or it ought to be why we do what we do. Not just so we can get the accolades, not just so we can be recognized. You know, it's an important thing there. Paul was a rock star in the early church. Everybody knew who Paul was. I mean, even today, everybody knows who Paul is. When I was a kid and I was thinking about heaven and going to heaven, one of the things I wanted to do was meet Paul. I mean, hello, this guy is famous. This guy's the big guy. Everybody knew his name. You know what he says? I want him to see Christ. I want him to see Christ. He says, I want you to imitate me. That's what he says in another place. I want you to imitate me in my lifestyle. I want you to follow Christ. Don't follow Paul. Follow Christ. He's the big guy. And he's saying, hey, it's not about me. It's about Jesus. You know, we're supposed to live to point others to Christ. Jesus says we're salt and light. You know, we're supposed to be salt and light and bring goodness to the world and spread the light and share the light of Christ with others. And not only are we to let our light shine, but the warning is there as well. If the salt has lost its savor, wherewith shall it be made salty again? You know, if we allow ourselves to quit reflecting the light of Christ, if we allow ourselves to quit being the people of God, if we allow ourselves to put ourselves up as, can you imagine, just for a split second, you go to a restaurant and they bring you, are we having baked potatoes tonight? Is that right, Rod? Nope. Okay, never mind. You go to a restaurant and they bring you out a baked potato. And they bring out the baked potato and nowadays they like to rub them down with oil and coat them with salt, sea salt. You notice that? They like to do that on the skins up. Can you imagine if instead of a baked potato coated with, rubbed down with oil and coated with sea salt, they brought you a bowl of salt? Said, eat this. My daughter would love it if they gave her a little ketchup with it back when, but other than that, most of us probably wouldn't like that very much. We would say, you know, it's just too salty. Here's a clue, folks. When the salt overrides the meat, or the salt overrides the vegetables, or the salt overrides the watermelon until all you taste is salt, it ruins it. And if we put ourselves in a situation where we override Christ, we ruin it for people. We're the salt of the earth. Christ is the main course. We're supposed to be salty. We are. We're supposed to be flavorful. We're supposed to help preserve. We're supposed to help do all those things. But we cannot get in the way of the message. We can't override the message. And there's an important lesson there that we ought to take as we look at it. Because he says if we do that, we're not of any value anymore if we lose that. Back in 1995, there was a movie called The American President. Michael Douglas and Martin Sheen played in the movie. Martin Sheen was the president's chief of staff. They'd been friends for years, according to the movie's plot, for many, many years. And later on in the movie, they have this really intense scene. And it's really, 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 really going hard for him, and things are going tough. And Sheen is encouraging the president to respond to one of his critics. And the president, Douglas, says, you know, Sheen, you must really like the... Well, he doesn't call him Sheen, he calls him by his character name. You must really like the view from the cheap seats, because you're always there. I'm the one that's out in front of everybody. And Martin Sheen responds to him. He says, well, I never ran for president because if I hadn't supported you to run for president, you'd still be teaching history at the University of Wisconsin. You know, the idea is I made you what you are. Don't be bigger than you really think you are. And sometimes we think we're bigger than we are. And although Sheen was an unknown, he had made Douglas to be who he was. So this week, as we continue to meet God's people, we're going to look at Luke. And Luke is a guy who's unknown, and yet we know him. We don't know him, and we don't know a lot about him, but we know a lot about him, and we know him. And so how does that work, that we both know and don't know him? And we're going to look at that a little bit as we see that. Paul says, got the wrong text there. Paul says of Luke that he was well known to the church in Corinth. He lived to make his life known to Christ, he lived to make Christ known. His gospel account was well researched. Of all the gospel accounts, he's the one that says, I went and I talked to people and I got here and I'm attempting to put down an orderly account of the things that are going on. He's read the other available accounts. He's talked to some of the witnesses, and undoubtedly those witnesses included the apostles or some of the apostles. Undoubtedly those witnesses included some of the people in Jerusalem who had known Jesus personally. Undoubtedly he had tried to interview Mary and others who had been around for all of Jesus' life. That's what Luke was trying to do as he set out his gospel. He wrote so that others could know the truth about his Savior. Are we living our lives for the same reason? Because that's a life work, what he was doing, trying to let others know. Or are we living for ourselves and promoting ourselves? Look at me. Look at me. Look at me. There was a skit many years ago that I saw, I don't know how many times, at different youth events, and it was always, I don't know, there were usually about 8 or 10 people that would walk up and down the aisle, the kids in the skit, and they'd say, look at me, look at me, look at me, and they'd have different signs and different costumes and things, and then finally somebody would say, stop, look at Christ. And so the two of them would say, look at Christ, and then the next one would come down, look at me, look at me, look at, like I said, I saw it, I don't know how many times at how many different youth rallies, and each time it was done a little differently than the time before, but the point was pretty serious, and the point was pretty real, because a lot of times we live our lives saying, look at me, look at me. We do our hair so that people will notice our hair. We do our makeup so that people notice our makeup. We wear our clothes so that people notice our clothes. We drive our cars so that people will notice our cars. Everything we do is about look at me. Some of us talk a lot louder than others do because we like attention. Others talk a little quieter because they're less liking of attention, maybe. But it seems like everything we do is look at me, look at me, look at me. And we ought to be saying, look at him. Look at him. Look at him. We live in that world. There's no doubt about that. Are we living our lives for the same reason Luke was, to glorify Christ? This morning we're going to look at 3 points about Luke, and I'm going to try to make it a short lesson as we do that, because I think the lesson in and of itself is about not giving Luke the glory because he didn't want it, and at the same time recognizing the honor he deserves. And so we're going to look at that. And I saw this little cartoon. I thought it was kind of cute. It says, why are we here? To serve others. Why are others here? To annoy us. I kind of think that's pretty accurate sometimes, the way we feel sometimes. But we're going to look at Luke, first of all, as the unknown Luke. The unknown Luke. You know, there's only 3 passages in the New Testament that mention Luke's name. Did you know that? As much as you know of Luke, did you realize his name is only mentioned 3 times in the New Testament? You think, wait a minute, there's a whole gospel. Yeah, there is. In Colossians 4 and 14, he says, Luke, the beloved physician, greets you, as does Demas. In 2 Timothy 4:11, Paul writes, Luke alone is with me. Get Mark and bring him with you, for he's very useful in my ministry. And in Philemon, verse 24, as do Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke, my fellow workers. The only person that ever uses Luke's name is Paul. And only 3 times. Only 3 times. It's kind of amazing when we do that, when we read that and see that. I was surprised. I really was when I started looking up how many times Luke's name was in the New Testament. I was surprised by that a little bit. Furthermore, there are only a few passages where he's mentioned in the we statements. In Acts 16 that we just read, in Acts 20, and a couple of places there, in Acts 27 and in Acts 2, we get the idea of the we statements. We did this, and we did that, and we did that, and then we find out who all the group was, and we find out, okay, the writer was there, and Luke's the writer, so he's the we. Or part of the we there as we look at that. And in contrast, Peter and Paul, they kind of dominate the New Testament with their names. Peter's name's mentioned over 150 times in the New Testament. Paul's name's mentioned over 150 times in the New Testament. Peter, Paul, Peter, Paul, Peter, Paul. Who's Luke? Where's he at? 3 times. 3 times. We don't see him very much in Scripture. The picture of him is a little different. Apparently, he's a Gentile because he's kind of contrasted. If we look here, these are the only men of the circumcision among my fellow workers. Now, there was a list there, and Jesus, who's called Justice, is the last of the ones in that list. And I didn't put the rest of the text up there. But then if you look down there, he says Luke is here too. Now, these are the only men of the circumcision. Luke is here too. That implies that Luke's a Gentile. There's a strong implication there that he's a Gentile. He's a physician. Verse 14 says, Luke, the beloved physician, greets you. So he's a physician. We know that about him. Irenaeus, who was an early church writer and leader in the church way back when in the early 2nd century, he claimed that Paul and Luke were inseparable. And he's a fellow worker with Paul. We find him in Colossians 4. We find him in 2 Timothy 4. We find him in Philemon 24, the 3 times his name is mentioned by Paul. And because of the nautical terminology that he uses and some of the terminology he uses in the we passages, many scholars have concluded that Luke might have been a slave who had been assigned as the personal physician of Paul. And that's why he traveled with Paul everywhere Paul went. In those days, oftentimes, a slave that had talents like a physician or something like that, someone would buy them and they would assign them to a family member that was sick. So many scholars think maybe he was a slave that was assigned to take care of Paul. In addition to the New Testament, there's an early commentary that was written on Luke's gospel about 175 AD, so about 100 years after the New Testament, not gospel, 100 years after the gospel, that was written about Luke. And here's what they said about him at that time. that he was from Antioch of Syria, that he was with Paul until Paul's martyrdom, that he never married or had any children, and that he died at the age of 84 in the town of Boeotia. Now, we don't know if that's true, but here are people who are trying to develop a history of the church within 100 years or so. They probably had researched that a little bit, and that's what they at least believed at that time. Or somebody made up a story. Like I said, it's not gospel. It's something that was written 100 years later, but it's the traditions that have been carried about down about him. And while that might seem like a good amount of information in the grand scheme of things, he really remains largely unknown. You know, there's a lot more about Luke that we don't know than there is that we do know. Even if all the extra-biblical writings are true, we still don't know much about him. Maybe it's because he was trying to focus the attention of his readers on Christ instead of on himself. Instead of saying, I was, he says, we were. Instead of saying, Luke was traveling with, he says, Paul and his companions. Instead of saying, oh, great Theophilus, I, Luke, am writing to you, as Paul did in some of his letters, he just says, I'm trying to write down an orderly account without even signing his name on it. Maybe that's part of what's going on there. Maybe he's trying to focus the attention away from himself, and maybe that's why he's so unknown. But he's also pretty well known, I would think. He's well known by Paul. Paul again writes, Luke, the beloved physician, Luke alone is with me. Mark, Aristarchus, Demas, and Luke, my fellow workers. Paul knew him well and mentioned him in his writings. Otherwise, we wouldn't know what little we do know about him. Mission trips and imprisonments gave him plenty of time to be known by Paul and to be loved by Paul. He loved him and trusted him so much that he probably was with him, because 2 Timothy 4 and 11 is some of the last words Paul ever wrote. He's about to be martyred, and only Luke is with me. Timothy, I want you to come quick. I want you to bring my scrolls. I want you to bring my coat. I want you to get here before wintertime. It's bad. This is the last time I'm going to write. I'm about to be poured out as a drink offering. Luke's still here. Luke's the one that's with me. And so we understand that a little bit. He was well known by the church. You know, when Paul writes the letter to the Colossian church, he writes there and he says that he refers to Luke as the beloved physician. Now there's a question there whether he's beloved by Paul or beloved by the church. It's possible that because he was tending to Paul's needs and he's with Paul, and especially when Paul was all alone except for Luke, it's possible he's talking about, this is the guy I love. This is the guy I love with all my heart because he's here with me everywhere I go. He's been through all my trials with me. He's been through all the turmoil I've been through. He's been side by side in my ministry as I've ministered, and so I love him like a brother. He could mean that Luke had a special relationship with the church at Colossae. He could have been from Colossae for all we know. We don't know that. And so he may be saying, hey, you guys know this guy, and you love him, and you've learned to love him too, just like I have. We don't have any history in the Bible that says that Paul and Luke spent a great period of time in Colossae for him to develop a relationship with them, but he could have been there before his relationship with Paul. It could have been at some prior period or something, but he's beloved, at least, maybe by the church, at least by Paul, and he loves the church. Luke greets you. You know, all these other names, some of them greet you, some of them don't. All these other names are important, and they are, but he puts a point in there that Luke greets them too, along with Demas, and it's important that they understand that. The church there knew that, and they knew of his great writings. We refer to as the Gospel of Luke and the Acts of the Apostles. They knew about that, and many have speculated that both the Gospel and the Book of Acts were written as a defense for Paul when he went on trial in Rome. You know, they want to think that maybe the Acts shows why Paul believed in, or the Gospels show why Paul believed in Jesus. This is why Paul believed, and the Acts show what he did in response to his belief, or how he responded to what he believed, and so how he carried out his commission. And they would postulate that Theophilus was a particular person in the Roman government that was going to hear Paul's case, maybe a judge, or maybe he's Paul's defense counsel and he's going to be defending Paul and he needed all this documentation to show why Paul wasn't a threat to the empire at all. And maybe that's what it's all for. The other thought about that is that, and I tend to believe that maybe Paul, with his background as a Pharisee of Pharisees, remember that's what he refers to himself as? I think maybe Paul the Pharisee says, hey, Luke, somebody needs to put down an orderly account about the Gospels. We've got all these accounts that kind of jump from point to point to point. We need something to tie it all together for people. We need somebody to write down something about the church and about how it started spreading out because nobody else is doing that. And so maybe that's what his job was to do that. And I tend to think that maybe Theophilus, friend of God, might have referred to every friend of God that reads the letter to all of us today. But then again, I wasn't there. I can't tell you that for sure because I wasn't there. And he didn't tell me specifically. Whatever his motivation, the Holy Spirit was his guide. I know that. I know that for sure. The church in the 21st century knows Luke pretty well too. You know, we may not know him personally, but there's another sense in which he's well known to us. His writings compose almost 30% of the New Testament. Almost a third of all the words in the New Testament were written by Luke. That's pretty amazing when we look at that. More than any other author in the New Testament, a great portion of our understanding of the life of Jesus comes from Luke's pen. A huge portion of our knowledge of the church comes from Luke's pen. If we were to eliminate Luke's writings from the New Testament, we wouldn't know when to take communion. We wouldn't know how to take communion, probably. We might figure it out from the other writers. At least we would know what they did on the night Jesus was betrayed, but we wouldn't know the New Testament church did it. We wouldn't necessarily understand that baptism is necessary. We would have Jesus' words. He who believes and is baptized will be saved, and everyone else will be condemned. But half the scholars, biblical scholars in the world, say that that part of Mark was never in the original text. And so they would argue that if you took that out, there is no baptism. If you took Luke's writings out, then there's no proof of it. But if you take Luke's writings, there's nobody saved that wasn't baptized. Not one, not ever. That's pretty important, I would think. Luke's pretty important. The New Testament church, we know about Luke. We know him well, although we don't really know him. We just know what he wrote, and we know about him because of what he said. And I think it's important that we understand that. There was a movie in 1977. It's called Jesus of Nazareth. Y'all may remember that movie. I don't know if you do. Some of you are too young, and some of you might be too old to remember the movie. I don't know. But in 1977, there was a movie called Jesus of Nazareth, and it was based, according to the directors, on the Gospel of Luke. Now, having said that, there were a couple of scenes from the Gospel of John that were in there as well, so that's kind of odd when they say it that way, but from the Gospel of Luke, basically, to let people know about Jesus. That was the goal. It was the Jesus movie of the day, trying to let people learn to know or get to know Jesus. Here's the question. How much honor is there really for someone whose greatest goal in life was to point people to Jesus? When you meet Luke in heaven, you can go to Luke and say, part of the reason I'm here is because of what you wrote. That's his great glory. That's his great honor. We'll be in heaven in part because of the words Luke wrote. That's a pretty big honor. That's a pretty big glory. I'm looking forward to meeting him someday and telling him thank you because he helps us to see Jesus better. He's known by God. He's known by God. You know, that's pretty amazing when we think about that, that even if nobody else knew who he was, even if we never figured out who he was, God would still know who he was. And ultimately, that's all that really matters, that God used him and respected him enough to let him write a third of the New Testament. There's that Jesus of Nazareth movie. So what do we learn? What do we learn from our study of Luke? You know, if my name was mentioned to most Christians in the world, they'd have no clue who I am. I'd just be another unknown. They wouldn't know. And among the select few that might recognize my name, even a smaller group would really know me. And the same's true for most of the Christians that we know. You know, you start throwing out names of famous preachers and things like that, and some people have heard of them and some people haven't, and some people know who they are. And if you say Marshall Keeble, there's folks that can say, oh, I remember hearing Brother Keeble back at so-and-so. He was famous. He's probably one of the most famous preachers in our brotherhood. But do you know what? If you're under 60, you never heard him. You might have heard a cassette tape or a recording or something, but you didn't hear him yourself. And so that's most of us in the world today. We need to understand that most of us Christians are relative unknowns in the world. People don't know us for our Christianity necessarily. But at the same time, some are pretty well known. There are some like that. And here's the question, for what are we known? I was sitting in a lecture one time, a lectureship, And I guess I was bored. I don't know. Sometimes I make doodle notes when I'm bored, and sometimes I'm paying attention, and they made a good point. And I'll say, oh, he had a good point, and I'll write down a couple of good points that they had. And so I'm not sure which it was because I didn't put a foot. Usually I'll say, he had a good point or whatever. But all of a sudden I start thinking, what do they think of the church, the people outside? Do they think of us as good people? Do they think of us as bad people? Do they think of us as believers? Do they think of us as a cult? Do they even notice that we exist? That's what I wrote down. And I may have gotten my inspiration from something the speaker said, or like I said, I may have just been bored and I was trying to stay awake. I don't know, because I normally make a note where I got that when I come up with it. So I'm going to attribute myself for an original thought. I don't have many of those, so I'll take credit for that. But having said that, I remember one time introducing myself as the preacher of the local Church of Christ. And somebody said, oh, I know you. Y'all are the church that helps people. And I thought, wow, isn't that great? Isn't it great to be known in a community as the church that helps people? Wouldn't that be wonderful if that's how we were known? But wouldn't it be even better if we were known as the church that leads people to Christ? Because isn't that why we help people? Isn't that why we do what we do? Isn't that why we show up on Sunday morning? Isn't that why we read our Bible through the week? Isn't that why we're good to our wives and our children and our husbands and our families and our neighbors and everyone else in the world around us? Because we want them to see Jesus? And wouldn't it be great if we were known as the person or the people who lead people closer to Christ? Wouldn't that be great? The contemporary Christian band, Casting Crowns, has a song called Nobody. I love it. I love the song. The chorus goes like this. Because I'm just a nobody trying to tell everybody all about somebody who saved my soul. Ever since you rescued me, you gave my heart a song to sing. I'm living for the world to see, nobody but Jesus. I'm living for the world to see, nobody but Jesus. Later on in the song, he says, so let me go down. Mine's not popping up there. Let me go down, down, down in history as another blood-bought, faithful member of a family. And if they all forget my name, that's fine with me. I'm living for the world to see, nobody but Jesus. You know, sometimes we can get in the way of the world seeing Jesus. You can go ahead and take that down now. Charlie, just go ahead and cut that. We live in a world where people are looking for hope. We live in a world where people are worried. They're worried about the economy. They're worried about wars. They're worried about rumors. They're worried about schools. They're worried about shootings in schools. They're worried about, I went to a ball game. You got to go to a metal detector to go to a ball game. You know that? You know why? Because people are worried. They lock the doors at the school. We lock the doors at the building when services start. We leave one door open so folks can get in. But we lock the other doors. Why? Not because we're worried, but because we do have concerns. Doesn't that mean worried? We lock the doors in our houses and our cars. Well, I remember when I was growing up, every other guy had a pickup truck. I was telling GD about this the other day. Every other guy on the school parking lot had a pickup truck. Every single pickup truck had a gun rack in the back window. Y'all remember them old gun racks that you slide up and down in there? Every single gun rack had a .22 rifle and a 12-gauge shotgun. Every single one at school every day. And if somebody got a new gun, all the guys went out between class, and they went out there, and they played with the new gun and looked at the new gun, and everybody admired the new gun and bragged about it, and they put it back in the truck and off, and everybody went on. The windows were down on the truck because it was too hot when you came out of school sometimes to get in the truck if you didn't leave the windows down, because a lot of them didn't have air conditioning back then in their trucks. There were no school shootings. We weren't worried. We weren't concerned. We didn't have to have metal detectors. They built cannons in shop class. I know. I built one of them. We worry about everything in the world. When's the last time we spent that much time worrying about the souls of those people around us? When's the last time we decided that the most important thing I can do in this world is to bring peace to a world that is desperately seeking peace by sharing with them the Word of God? Maybe we need to do a little more P.R. Watkins stuff. Maybe it's not in me to be the preacher this week. Maybe it's not in me to be the Bible class teacher this week. Maybe it's not in me to be the elder this week. Maybe it's not in me to be the great Christian this week or to open a Bible study with somebody this week. But you know what is in me this week? It's in me to be sweet and kind and gentle and to say, hey, where do you worship at? I'd love to invite you to come and worship with me. Do you know I have never in my life, I've had people say, I'm not interested or no, but I've never had anybody be rude to me when I ask them that question. And you won't experience it either, I'm pretty sure.